When the lights go out, they speak. The vanished, the cursed, the cruel. Their echoes live here. I'm Raven Vale, and you've just crossed the threshold. Welcome to Whispers from the Dark. Whispers from the Dark. Manufactured reality. How perception is engineered in the modern age. By Raven Vale. There is a moment before a story breaks, before the headline, before the push notification, before the anchor looks directly into the camera and says, with the cadence that has been practiced, calibrated, and refined across decades of broadcast training, "We are just now learning." In that moment, something else has already happened. The framing has been chosen. Not the facts, the framing. The angle from which the facts will arrive. The emotional register they will be delivered in. The sequence in which details will be revealed. The specific words selected from a range of available options, each word carrying a slightly different emotional charge, each capable of producing a slightly different response in the body before the mind has caught up. The emotional tone has been calibrated. The pacing of sentences, the weight in the voice, the image behind the anchor, the music, if there is music, have all been considered. The sequence has been scheduled. The story does not simply arrive. It is delivered. And delivery, the how, the when, the what comes first, changes everything about how content is received, interpreted, stored, and acted upon. We like to believe we consume information. The belief flatters us. It suggests we are in control, that we encounter raw material, process it through our own judgment, and arrive at our own conclusions by our own means. But what if information consumes us? What if perception itself can be engineered, not through overt censorship, not through the clumsy removal of inconvenient facts, but through pacing, through repetition, through the careful sequencing of emotional stimuli that prepares the body to receive information in a specific way before the mind has any say in the matter? Why do major stories break at synchronized moments across ostensibly competing platforms? Why do specific phrases, nearly identical ones, echo across different networks and different cities within hours of each other? Why does repetition reshape belief even when the underlying facts remain entirely unchanged? Tonight, we are not exposing hidden cabals. We are examining mechanics, the invisible architecture of narrative, the engineering of perception, the way the structure of information delivery shapes what we feel, what we believe, and ultimately, what we do. This is Whispers from the Dark. The first frame. Imagine two cameras filming the same event at the same moment. One zooms in tightly, close enough to fill the frame with chaos, movement, and faces in distress. The event feels immediate, overwhelming, everywhere at once. The other pulls back. Wider shot, context visible on all sides. The crowd that looked enormous in the close shot occupies one corner of a much larger space. The smoke that seemed to consume everything is coming from a single point. The scene is still significant. The event is real. But the emotional temperature of the wider frame is fundamentally different. Both cameras are pointing at the same reality. But they are not producing the same story, the same feeling, or the same conclusions in the minds of the people who watch each version. This is framing, and framing is not lying. Framing is selecting, and selection is unavoidable because human attention is finite, cognition requires reduction, and every act of communication is a series of choices about what to include, what to leave out, and in what order. The question is not whether selection happens. The question is, who is doing the selecting, and what effect their choices, deliberate or habitual, are having on the people who receive what they produce. Psychologists have documented a phenomenon called anchoring. The first piece of information received about a situation becomes the reference point around which all subsequent information is interpreted. If the first frame is fear, if the initial presentation is saturated with urgency, with alarm, with the cues that trigger the body's threat response systems, then every subsequent update is interpreted through that emotional filter. New developments feel dangerous. Stabilizing information feels insufficient. If the first frame is stability, measured, contextual, careful to establish proportion before detail, then the same updates feel manageable. Different content, identical facts. Perception begins with placement. Not content, placement. The first thing you feel about a story is the most durable thing you will feel about it. And that first feeling is determined not by the facts, but by the choices made in delivering them. The timing of impact. Have you noticed how major stories often break at predictable moments in the day? Early morning, arriving with the first phone check, when the mind is still orienting, when defenses are low and the day's emotional baseline has not yet been established. Late afternoon, when cognitive resources are depleted from a day of decision-making, when the brain is most susceptible to shortcuts and least capable of sustained critical analysis. Just before markets close, just before prime-time news cycles, positioned to set the emotional agenda for the hours when screen time peaks and attention consolidates. Timing is strategic, not necessarily malicious, strategic. The distinction matters. The people making decisions about when to publish are not, in most cases, agents of hidden agendas. They are professionals within competitive systems that reward attention and punish irrelevance, who have developed through experience and data a sophisticated understanding of when their audience is most receptive, most emotionally activated, and most likely to share and respond. Breaking news during peak attention hours guarantees maximum emotional penetration, not because the information is more important, but because the audience is more available and more activated. Newsrooms understand audience rhythms with a precision that has only sharpened as behavioral data has grown more abundant. They understand when cortisol spikes, when fatigue lowers resistance to simplified narratives, when outrage travels fastest through social networks. The cycle is not random, it is paced. Sustained alarm exhausts. An audience held in continuous high alert eventually stops responding. The system overloads, attention shuts down. Intermittent alarm, by contrast, maintains engagement. The audience is allowed to relax slightly before the next event reactivates the stress response. Too many simultaneous crises overwhelm the capacity to process any of them. Staggered crises, one at a time, with breathing room between, maintain focus and prevent the overload that produces disengagement. The rhythm matters as much as the content, and the rhythm is not accidental. Repetition as reinforcement. Of all the mechanisms through which perception is shaped without facts being altered, repetition may be the most powerful and the least examined. Psychologists studying human cognition have documented what they call the illusory truth effect, the well-replicated finding that repeated statements are judged to be more true than statements encountered for the first time, regardless of accuracy. The effect does not require that people consciously update their beliefs. It operates below the level of deliberate evaluation. What repetition does is reduce cognitive friction. The first time a claim is encountered, the mind must process it, evaluate its source, its plausibility, its relationship to prior knowledge. This processing requires effort. Effort produces resistance. The second time the claim appears, processing is easier. Familiarity feels like recognition. Recognition feels like confirmation. By the fifth time, by the tenth, by the 50th, encountered across platforms from different voices in different contexts, the claim no longer feels like a claim. It feels like fact. Not because it was verified, because familiarity made evaluation feel unnecessary. When a phrase echoes across platforms simultaneously, it becomes ambient, part of the informational background we move through without scrutinizing, the way we move through the air in a room without analyzing its composition. Background noise becomes belief. Catchphrases crystallize complex events into single digestible units. Simplification spreads. Nuance, which requires more cognitive work to hold, more words to express, more tolerance for uncertainty to accept, falls away. Not because it was suppressed, because it was outpaced. Repetition eliminates friction. Friction slows belief. Remove friction, and belief accelerates, not through force, but through the quiet, accumulating weight of the familiar. Emotional priming. Emotion precedes analysis. This is not philosophy. It is neuroscience, the documented sequence in which the brain processes incoming information, in which emotional systems activate before analytical ones, in which the body responds before the mind engages. We feel before we think. We react before we evaluate. And by the time we are consciously analyzing what we see or hear, the emotional context in which we are doing that analysis has already been established by systems that did not wait for our permission. Modern media understands this, not always consciously or cynically, but through the accumulated practical knowledge of practitioners who have spent decades observing what produces engagement. Visuals come first. The image accompanying a story sets the emotional register before a single word of text is read. A photograph of the same crowd can make an event feel triumphant or threatening, depending on angle, the faces visible, the lighting, the context provided or withheld. Music cues activate emotional states directly, bypassing language entirely. The score beneath a broadcast segment is not decorative. It is functional, establishing the emotional key in which information will be received. Tone of voice carries enormous weight. The same sentence delivered with gravity versus measured calm produces different physiological responses, different levels of urgency, different assessments of severity, before any evaluation of the sentence's actual content has occurred. Color palettes in broadcast design, urgent animated graphics, the speed of editing, all prime the viewer's emotional state before the facts arrive. If you are primed with fear, you interpret information defensively. The same statistic that would feel manageable in a neutral emotional state feels alarming when encountered in a fear-primed one. If you are primed with anger, you interpret information aggressively, assigning blame, seeking confirmation of grievance. If you are primed with triumph, you interpret information as evidence of what you already believed. Same facts, different priming, completely different conclusions. And in most cases, the people receiving the information are entirely unaware that the priming happened at all. The news cycle as engine. The 24-hour news cycle did not simply expand coverage. It altered the fundamental structure of how events are experienced by the people living through them. Before continuous updates existed, before the ticker at the bottom of the screen, before the refresh button, before the alert that arrives, before you have finished processing the previous one, events had time to settle. Information arrived, was absorbed, was discussed, was integrated into an existing understanding of the world. The cognitive process had room to complete itself. That room no longer exists. In a continuous news environment, stories must evolve hourly to sustain attention. An event that stops developing is an event that stops being watched. And an event that stops being watched generates no revenue, no clicks, no data, no engagement metrics that justify the resources being directed at it. This creates what might be called narrative inflation. Small developments are framed as dramatic turns, not because the journalists describing them are being dishonest, but because the competitive environment rewards urgency and punishes proportionality. A minor update that would have been a footnote in the evening paper becomes a chyron that runs for 3 hours on cable news, described in language calibrated to maintain the emotional state that keeps the viewer from changing the channel. Speculation fills the gaps between confirmed updates. Panels assemble to debate hypotheticals. What might happen? What sources are suggesting? What this could mean if the conditional, the possible, the unconfirmed, all delivered in the same register as established fact, because the alternative is silence, and silence is commercial death. Urgency becomes not a response to specific events, but a permanent atmospheric condition. And permanent urgency does something specific to the people living inside it. It rewires stress baselines. The human nervous system is designed for episodic threat, for the appearance of a predator. The resolution of that threat through flight or fight or freeze, and then the return to a physiological baseline of relative calm in which the body can recover and restore itself. It is not designed for chronic, low-grade, relentless alarm signals arriving at 5-minute intervals for 12 hours a day. When every day feels like a breaking moment, the nervous system does not simply maintain its alertness. It adapts. High alert becomes the new normal. Normal becomes exhaustion. And exhausted minds are measurably less analytical, less capable of sustained critical evaluation, and significantly more reactive, more prone to accepting simplified explanations, more susceptible to emotional manipulation, more likely to reach for the tribal shortcut than to work through the complexity of what is actually happening. The cycle does not intend this, but it produces it, and the production matters regardless of the intent. Without censorship. Here is the subtlety that makes this harder to see than outright propaganda. Perception can be shaped without suppressing a single piece of information. You do not need to erase dissent or confiscate inconvenient publications or block access to alternative sources. The information can exist, can be technically accessible, can be findable by anyone determined enough to look, while being functionally invisible to the vast majority of people who will never look that hard. You only need to overshadow it. The dynamics that produce this overshadowing are not, in most cases, the result of centralized decisions. They emerge from the interaction of incentive structures that each make complete sense on their own terms. Platforms are built to optimize for engagement. Engagement, in measurable behavioral terms, most reliably correlates with content that produces strong emotional responses. Content that makes people feel anger, fear, outrage, moral vindication, or tribal solidarity. This correlation is not a secret. It is an established finding that the platforms themselves have acknowledged in various forms. Content that produces strong emotional responses spreads faster and reaches more people than content that is measured, complex, or that requires sustained attention and tolerance for uncertainty to fully process. Alternative perspectives, more nuanced framings, dissenting analyses, information that complicates the dominant narrative rather than confirming it, may exist in the same informational ecosystem. But they are algorithmically disadvantaged. They generate less immediate engagement. They spread more slowly. They reach smaller audiences. They do not disappear. They are buried beneath velocity. Censorship is obvious. When information is removed, the removal can be detected, documented, and protested. The act of censorship announces that something is being hidden, which immediately raises the question of what and why. Oversaturation is invisible. It does not remove the alternative. It simply ensures that the alternative never accumulates enough velocity to reach critical mass, never becomes ambient enough to feel like common knowledge, never competes effectively with the content that the system's incentive structures have already optimized for amplification. And oversaturation can redirect the attention and beliefs of a population more efficiently and with less resistance than prohibition. Because you cannot protest what you never noticed was happening. The role of language. Language is never neutral. This is a statement that sounds like it ought to be controversial, that ought to invite pushback from people who believe in objective reporting and the faithful transmission of factual information. But it is not actually controversial among linguists, cognitive scientists, or anyone who has spent sustained time examining how meaning is constructed in communication. Words are not transparent vessels for pre-existing facts. They are choices. Each choice carries a different emotional weight, activates a different set of associations, positions the speaker and the subject and the audience in a specific relationship to each other. Consider a single event described with different vocabulary. A gathering of people who have assembled to express opposition to a policy can be described as a protest, a word with a long and largely honorable history in democratic societies, associated with legitimate civic participation. Or it can be described as a riot, a word that activates associations with danger, with illegality, with the breakdown of order that civil society exists to prevent. The event is the same event. The facts of what occurred are identical. But the word choice has already determined, before the first specific detail is presented, how most readers or viewers will orient themselves emotionally toward what they are about to hear. Reform implies gradual, considered adjustment within existing structures. Overhaul implies disruption, the displacement of what exists in favor of something fundamentally different. Concern implies awareness and monitoring, a professional relationship to a problem. Crisis implies emergency, a situation that has passed beyond the reach of ordinary management and demands extraordinary response. Each of these word pairs describes a real position on a spectrum of severity, and choosing where on that spectrum to locate a given situation, in the absence of perfect information, in the presence of genuine uncertainty about how serious something is a choice. A linguistic, editorial, framing choice that will shape how millions of people understand and respond to the situation being described. When specific terminology becomes standardized across an informational ecosystem, when the same words appear in the same contexts across enough sources that they begin to feel like the obvious, natural, only available description of a phenomenon, interpretation narrows. The spectrum collapses. The alternative framings that once existed fade from common usage, which means they fade from common thought. Language shapes memory. Memory shapes belief. Belief shapes identity. And identity, once formed around a set of linguistic habits, resists disruption. Challenging the vocabulary begins to feel not like analytical inquiry, but like an attack on the person who has organized their understanding of the world around it. The cycle tightens. Synchronization. Why do certain narratives appear simultaneously across multiple outlets that are, ostensibly, competing with each other for attention and trust? The surface explanation is structural. Information ecosystems are deeply interconnected in ways that are not always visible to the people consuming their outputs. Wire services distribute content to hundreds of subscribing outlets simultaneously. The same reporting, the same language, arriving at newsrooms across the country and across the world at the same moment, ready to be published under different mastheads that suggest independent sourcing. Press releases from governments, corporations, and institutions land in thousands of inboxes at once, providing not just information, but framing, suggesting, through their own word choices and structural emphasis, how the information should be presented and what it should be understood to mean. Shared sources, the handful of officials, experts, and analysts who have become the established authorities on particular topics, are available to multiple outlets simultaneously, providing the same perspective to competing organizations whose audiences will each believe they are receiving independent corroboration rather than synchronized origination. Social media amplification accelerates the process further. When a framing goes viral, when it generates the kind of engagement that the platforms are designed to amplify, it spreads across the networks faster than competing framings can establish themselves. Speed demands coordination, even among competitors. But synchronization creates uniformity, and uniformity creates the perception of consensus, the impression that multiple independent organizations, through independent processes, arrived at the same understanding. The brain, encountering the same framing from multiple ostensibly separate sources, interprets that convergence as verification, as confirmation, as evidence that this is not one perspective among several, but simply the accurate description of what occurred. Even when the origin was singular, even when the apparent consensus is an artifact of how information moves rather than evidence of its accuracy. Confirmation reduces resistance, and resistance is what stands between information and belief. Crisis fatigue. Continuous crisis produces fatigue. Fatigue is not merely tiredness. In the context of sustained exposure to alarming information, fatigue is a specific cognitive state, a depletion of the attentional and analytical resources that critical thinking requires, produced by the metabolic cost of maintaining sustained vigilance over extended periods. When the nervous system has been operating in elevated alert for long enough, it cannot maintain that elevation indefinitely. Something gives. And what gives, typically, is not the vigilance itself. It is the cognitive overhead that would normally accompany the vigilance. The questioning, the evaluation, the tolerance for uncertainty and ambiguity that careful thinking demands. In a fatigued state, people default to heuristic shortcuts that reduce the cognitive cost of navigating a complex information environment. They trust familiar voices, not because those voices have been evaluated and found reliable, but because familiarity requires no new processing. They align with their tribe, not because tribal consensus has been verified, but because social alignment reduces the cognitive friction of independent evaluation. They accept simplified narratives, not because the simplification is accurate, but because complexity has become painful, and simplicity offers relief. Crisis fatigue narrows the window of attention, collapses the tolerance for nuance, and flattens the capacity for holding multiple competing possibilities in mind simultaneously. And a population in that state, exhausted, reactive, oriented toward simplicity and tribal alignment, becomes significantly easier to direct. This is not necessarily intentional manipulation. The fatigue is largely a byproduct of the relentless, competitive acceleration of the attention economy, in which every actor is optimizing for engagement within a system that rewards urgency and penalizes restraint. The intent is not always to exhaust, but the effect is the same, and the effect matters. The algorithm as editor. There was a time when human editors decided what you saw. Editors with names, professional histories, institutional affiliations, and accountability to publishers and audiences. Editors who could be questioned, criticized, fired, sued. Now, for the majority of people who encounter information online, the primary editorial decisions, what appears in your feed, in what order, with what prominence, are made by algorithms. Mathematical systems optimizing for engagement metrics, operating at a speed and scale that no human editorial process could match. They prioritize what holds attention, not what is true, not what is nuanced or complex or important in ways that resist easy emotional engagement. What holds attention and holds it in ways that produce the behavioral signals the platform interprets as successful engagement. Engagement-driven visibility reshapes perceived reality in a specific and consistent way. Because visibility equals perceived importance. If something trends, if it appears across the feeds of thousands or millions of people simultaneously, it feels urgent. It carries the weight of collective attention, which the human brain interprets as social endorsement. If something disappears from the feed, if it stops trending, stops appearing, stops accumulating the engagement signals that the algorithm rewards, it feels resolved, finished. As though the topic has been addressed, the situation has stabilized, there is nothing further to attend to. Even when neither is true, the algorithm is not ideological in any traditional sense. It does not have a political position. It does not favor one party or one worldview. But it is not neutral either. Its optimization targets produce consistent patterns, content that generates strong emotional responses, anger, fear, outrage, moral vindication. consistently outperforms content that generates reflection, uncertainty, or the careful weighing of competing claims. The system does not intend to amplify anxiety over thoughtfulness, but it does, because anxiety drives more clicks, more shares, more time on platform than thoughtfulness does. And the patterns that emerge from mathematical optimization at scale are indistinguishable in their effects on human perception from patterns that were deliberately designed to achieve those effects. Dominance, algorithmic dominance of certain framings, certain emotional registers, certain kinds of content, becomes perception. And perception, for most people, most of the time, becomes reality. Engineering without intent. Here is the most uncomfortable truth in everything we have covered tonight. Manufactured reality does not require a mastermind. It does not require a single architect, a secret committee, a coordinated conspiracy operating from a central location with a shared agenda. It does not require that anyone, anywhere, intend the outcomes they are collectively producing. It can emerge, and it does emerge, entirely from the interaction of individual actors, each optimizing rationally for their own survival within their own competitive system. Media companies competing for audience attention in an environment where attention is the scarce resource that everything else is built on. Each one making choices about framing, timing, language, and emotional calibration, not because they are executing an agenda, but because those choices produce better engagement numbers, which means more advertising revenue, which means continued operation. Social platforms competing for time on platform and behavioral data, which are the commodities they sell to advertisers. Each one tuning its algorithms to maximize the metrics that define success in their business model, without any particular investment in what those metrics do to the people whose attention they are capturing. Politicians competing for narrative control in an environment where the ability to define the terms of a debate, to establish which words will be used, which framing will become the default, which emotional register the conversation will be conducted in, is more valuable than almost any other political resource. Each actor is optimizing for survival within their own system. None of them needs to coordinate with the others. None of them needs to intend the collective outcome. Optimization produces patterns. Patterns aggregated across thousands of actors and billions of interactions produce a shaped informational environment, an atmosphere with its own emotional temperature, its own dominant narratives, its own recurring framings. No single architect, yet a constructed environment. The construction is real, and its effects on the people living inside it are real, regardless of whether anyone designed it. Can we resist? Awareness disrupts automation. This is the key insight, and it is both more hopeful and more demanding than it first appears. Perception engineering relies on speed, on the automaticity of emotional response, the fraction of a second in which the nervous system reacts to a priming stimulus, the moment in which framing lodges before analysis can engage, the accumulation of repetition that happens below the level of deliberate evaluation. The antidote is friction. Not cynicism, not the reflexive dismissal of all information as manipulated, which produces its own kind of cognitive paralysis and its own susceptibility to alternative forms of manipulation. But the specific, disciplined introduction of a pause between reception and reaction. Notice the framing. Before you decide how you feel about a story, ask. Who chose this angle? What would this look like from a different camera position? What is the wider shot that this tight framing excludes? Recognize the priming. Before you analyze the content, notice your emotional state. Are you afraid? Angry? Vindicated? Where did that state come from? Did it arrive with the visual, the music, the tone of voice, before the facts were presented? Identify the repetition. When a phrase feels obvious, when a narrative frame feels like common knowledge, ask, how did it become common? How many independent sources does this actually trace back to? Is the familiarity evidence of accuracy or evidence of volume? Slow down. The system rewards velocity. Your deliberateness is a form of resistance that costs the system something, however small. Media literacy is not a specialized skill for journalists and academics. It is psychological armor for anyone who consumes information in a world where information is the primary environment we inhabit. It is the capacity to see the frame around the image, to recognize that the frame exists, that it was put there by someone making choices, and that you are allowed to evaluate both the image and the frame before deciding what to believe. The goal is not to consume less information. It is to be a less automatic consumer of it. The final mirror. Manufactured reality is not, ultimately, about deception. It is about design. Information cannot travel without structure. Structure cannot exist without choices. Choices cannot be made without a perspective, a set of priorities, a conscious or unconscious theory about what matters and what does not, and how urgently. Every story that reaches you has been structured. Every headline has been written by someone who chose these words over other available words. Every broadcast has been edited in a sequence that produces one emotional experience rather than another. Every algorithm has been tuned to optimize for specific outcomes rather than others. This is not a conspiracy. It is a description of how communication works. But structure influences emotion. Emotion influences belief. Belief influences action. And in a world where information is the primary medium through which most people experience most of what is happening beyond their immediate physical environment, perception is not a private matter. It is infrastructure. Invisible infrastructure. Foundational, pervasive, and almost never examined by the people whose lives are built on top of it. The question is not whether narratives are engineered. They are. They always have been. Every culture in every era has had mechanisms for shaping the stories its members tell about the world, about each other, about what matters and why. The mechanisms change. The function persists. The question is whether we understand the engineering we are living inside, whether we can see the frame while we are looking at the picture, whether we can notice the priming while we are being primed. Because if perception shapes reality, if the stories we believe about the world become the world we collectively inhabit and act inside, then the engineering of perception is among the most consequential activities human beings engage in, and understanding it is not optional. The next time a story breaks, notice the timing. Is this arriving at a moment when you are most receptive, most depleted, most emotionally available? Notice the language. Which words were chosen from the range of available options? Which words were not? Notice how quickly the repetition spreads, how rapidly the same framing appears across platforms and voices that present themselves as independent of each other. And notice how your body feels before your mind catches up. The tightening, the urgency, the emotional state that arrived before you had time to decide how you wanted to feel. Perception is not passive. It is guided, not always by malice, often by mechanics, by competitive incentives, by algorithmic optimization, by the accumulated institutional habits of industries organized around attention rather than truth. But mechanics still matter. We are not prisoners of information. We are participants in its architecture. And participation implies choice. This has been Whispers from the Dark. I'm Raven Vale. And if reality ever feels slightly constructed, perhaps it is. Not entirely false, but carefully framed. And once you see the frame, you can never unsee it.